Loose machines are right back over there.
What are they doing way back there? Bring them up here where they belong. You can't even see them over there.
Okay.
What about the progressives with the high jackpots? Where are they?
These machines
are hidden. These are our best machines. They bring all the action.
No wonder the drop is off.
The action is in the front, not in the back. Bring them up front.
All right, I will.
Listen to me very carefully. There are three ways of doing things around here. The right way, the wrong way, and the way that I do it. You understand?
I do understand that. I'll get right on it. And thank you.
Don't thank me. Just do it. You're the slots manager. I shouldn't have to tell you this.
Dang, you are right, Mr. Rothstein. I am so sorry.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Red Sox Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and I'm joined by my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to juggle on live TV, Alex Perkins. Perk, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. I can't juggle, though, so that puts a bit of a hamper into that plan.
I mean, neither could De Niro, apparently.
Oh, really?
He fumbled a little bit at the end there. He had it for a hot minute, but...
I thought you were going to go with, like, most likely to bury a body in the desert or something.
I'll be honest, I totally forgot to think of one, so that was off the cuff, but I feel like I mostly got it.
I think you did. You nailed it.
I almost went most likely to start a car bombing. I'm like, yeah, that's not Perk. Perk would erupt in flames, probably.
Yeah, probably. I would just, like, not be motivated enough to survive a car bombing.
You see it coming, you're like, you know what?
Oh, well.
I've lived long enough.
This is at least an interesting way to go.
Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. This is the Red String Movie Podcast, where every week Perk and I review a movie that was connected to the last one we watched. If you like our show, we're on all podcast services. I'm pretty sure we post every Friday morning. And if you like us, you know, tell your friends about it. Share our show, and you can watch the movies with us. But this week, where we're talking about Casino, we're following Kevin Pollak, who was in The Usual Suspects we watched last time. And he was the clean guy, the green, who was kind of the front man for the casino they kind of threw under the bus in this movie. But yeah, Perk, why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, all right. Casino is a 1995 joint directed by Martin Scorsese, starring Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci, and Sharon Stone. It follows a casino.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. definitely watched it. And yeah, it follows the kind of parallels of two guys who grew up out east and then came out to Vegas to blaze a new path, and one of them through the mob, one of them through the casinos. And, a couple fun facts, there aren't many, but most of the conversations between Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci were improv, which I couldn't tell, but I definitely, yeah, probably.
I believe that, like,
yeah.
I mean, they've worked together for a long time.
Yeah, definitely. And then they had $1 million costume budget. Robert De Niro had 70 costumes, and Sharon Stone had 40, and they were allowed to keep them.
I'm surprised that De Niro had more than Sharon Stone, actually. Because, I mean, maybe it's just more obvious. I mean, he had a lot of suits, but because she was in a ton of cool outfits throughout the movie.
Definitely. Very flashy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there we go. Perk, why don't you go first? What did you think of the 3-hour epic Casino?
I liked it. I think the word you chose there, epic, is the perfect word to describe this movie. I feel like this is kind of a common thread in Scorsese movies where they are just incredibly epic stories. Some parts on the periphery here and there may stumble, but like the stories themselves are usually incredibly deep and intricate and long. You mentioned it's a long one. It's almost 3 hours long, and you can tell it's almost 3 hours long, but I was never really bored or anything.
Yeah. I also liked it. I think I most enjoyed the dual kind of storytelling between De Niro and Pesci and getting kind of their two storylines interweaving and kind of competing against each other.
I was curious to check with you, see how you felt about that, because... You know, I'm not a big voiceover fan.
Initially I was pretty against it.
Sure.
But then I kind of got used to it. But like, it felt like the first hour of the movie was all voiceover, and it's like, okay, can we do a little more showing instead of telling with some of this stuff? But at some point you kind of just resign yourself to it. And you're like, all right, this is the movie that he's trying to do. Scorsese's trying to do. So I'm just gonna accept it.
And I mean, like, there's a lot of info that's handed to you via expositional narration that if it had to be in the movie without that, it would have taken, this movie would have been 5 hours long. Mm-hmm. And I think it's got the interesting enough gimmick that it's like a back and forth. It's almost like a dialogue narration. Mm-hmm. Which I think was cool. And then when they spice in the what's his name? Like Frankie or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When they spice in him having a little narration, I thought that was funny.
There are little tiny bits of comedy in the movie, which I appreciated.
Definitely. There's absolutely some levity.
I think the biggest thing that I didn't like was Ginger's character. I just didn't really buy the turn because she's set up as such a strong, like, smart hustler, and then I just didn't really buy that the way she got into being kind of a drug addict. I think it just didn't really feel realistic to me. I would have loved her to be a third narration point and her also doing voiceover and her, like, because the thing in this movie, right, is like kind of greed, right? It's De Niro's character getting too greedy with, like, power and influence. It's Pesci's character getting too greedy with money and, like, overconfidence. I would have also liked to see Sharon Stone's Ginger, like, get also kind of greedy with, like, overconfidence, like the hustle she could pull off, and maybe she tries to hustle somebody that she shouldn't have and that bites her back. Like, I kind of would have, like, I've seen all three of them doing their own thing, but then she gets kind of relegated, and then I just don't know what the fuck is what she's thinking for the last part of the movie. I can't tell if she's playing Joe Pesci, or if he's playing her, or if she's sober at times or completely, like, I just could not get a read on character. Maybe I'm not supposed to, but I was a little bit disappointed with her arc, but overall, I really liked the movie, and I thought it was a cool story that it was worth watching.
I think I quite liked Ginger as a character because I was expecting. You haven't seen Wolf of Wall Street?
No, this is all the right. My first Scorsese movie, I think.
Okay, so I won't spoil, but like Margot Robbie is in kind of a similar type, like, positional role in The Wolf of Wall Street, but she mainly comes out, for the most part, like, unscathed, and her character is just kind of, you know, predictably, like, in the right most of the time, and I think it was super interesting to kind of see the portrayal of this Ginger character where she, I think... It the turn to, like, drugs and alcohol, I think I do buy it because they kind of set up that she has vices, you know, like she's big into jewelry. She can't stop loving her ex, you know, like she's stuck in these patterns. So I think that, you know, the stress of being in a loveless relationship probably put some emphasis on that, like, dependent type crux of her behavior. And so I find it at least interesting that, you know, she's not just perpetually, like, the good guy. I think they both do some heinous stuff. So
yeah,
no one's really in the right, which I think is kind of an interesting way to set things up.
Right, because, like, De Niro is the protagonist, right? But he is not without his flaws. Like, he is, like, emotionally abusive and manipulative to Ginger, right? Like, he's intentionally, like, hiding her jewelry and blocking it so she won't leave him. But he does kind of come out, not unscathed, but, like...
More or less, yeah.
More compared to other characters, he comes out unscathed in the end of this movie. I'm like, does he deserve that? And maybe that's... I mean, I'm not saying this has to be that kind of story, but, like, it's interesting, like, because... If you don't really pay attention too much, you could think that he's in the right the whole time and he's the good guy, but he's really not. Like, you really have to look at him close, but, like, no, like, he did get obsessed with, because, like, why the fuck would he start a TV show, right? Like, he wants to be on TV, he wants to feel important, he wants to have the power, right? And then how he manipulates Ginger. But, like, compared to what Ginger and Joe Pesci do, it's like, oh, this guy's a saint, you know? So I think the movie is, like, sneaky in that way of, like, it wants you to be like, oh yeah, Ace is the good guy, but he's actually not. Like, if you look at his behavior, he's not a perfect, you know, person or anything.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right. I think there's just a ton of bad guys. there's not really a good guy in this movie, so it it all feels like the underbelly, and I think everyone plays their part in doing wrong stuff. I mean, like I would say that the path that Ginger ends up going down is because Robert De Niro led her there. So, and yeah, I think one of the strongest dynamics in this movie is the relationship between Joe Pesci and Robert De Niro. I think those guys play off each other so well. Yeah. It's almost like they've been in a billion movies together.
Truly. And like, it's funny because I know Joe Pesci from Lethal Weapon 2, where he's like the comic relief character. So see him in this movie, like be like the muscle at like killing people. It was kind of a shock at first. I wasn't really used to it, but I got used to it by the end. I do buy him as muscle, even though he's like a smaller guy. But yeah, and like, his dynamic with Ginger was so interesting to me. Because like, it's very clear they're having an affair in late in the movie. But when she first goes to him, it's not clear that they're having an affair, right? Yeah. She's like kissing him, but he's not kissing her back. And like, okay, you can see him kind of sowing the seeds of manipulating her, right? And then we get the big reveal that he told her to kidnap Amy with James Woods. I forget his character's name. Les. So like, that was Pesci's idea.
I missed that.
Oh, yeah. She's like, I did what you told me to. Like, I took her and I came right back. And he's like, yep, you did the right thing. So that was his idea.
Gotcha.
But then later, I think when they're in the hotel after they have sex, like, she looks very, like, sober and coherent. I'm like, is she manipulating him? And that's what I was kind of hoping for, is, like, she would be the one to, like, get Pesci. He gets his comeuppance in the end, but, like, I don't know. I was putting too much of myself in there. I just wanted her to break out of her vices and, like, get comeuppance.
That was mostly initiated by her because she was literally just looking for protection.
Right.
Like, she's like, if I, you know, if I cozy up, if I be his girl, he'll take care of me. You know,
right. And
Robert Downey Jr. doesn't have muscle. He uses Joe Pesci for muscle. So if you cozy up to the muscle, you're probably going to be all
right. Right. So she was using him, but it didn't end up working out, obviously, because she ends up dying. Well, that wasn't really, but even her trying to get her jewels doesn't really work out. Yeah, I mean, I this movie nails characterization, right? Like,
definitely.
You really, all the characters feel very fleshed out, and you understand their motivations of what they're doing for the most part, and they're just fun to watch. One thing maybe I can ask you, since you've seen more Scorsese movies, that I didn't really understand is, like, why are they still listening to, like, the bosses back home in the Midwest? Like, what happens if they don't pay up?
Just die.
But, like, Pesci had, like, a whole crew. I feel like Pesci could... I mean, Pesci said, like, if you want a war, I'm ready. Like, I can take him. De Niro maybe couldn't. But, like, I don't know. I just, like, these bosses are just sitting at home collecting money, doing jack shit. Like, and maybe this is just, like, a gangster trope, and so I just need to accept it. But, like, they didn't prove to me that these guys deserve any respect besides saying, oh, they're the bosses, so we got to do what they say. It's like, I don't know them. I don't know what they've done. You're just telling me they're in charge and you have to pay them. Like, I didn't see their army, I guess, until maybe the end when they're capping people. But, like, I don't know. I was that part was felt unrealistic. I'm like, these guys are doing jack shit sitting in, like, a grocery store in Minnesota or whatever.
So that generally tends to be the characterization of mob bosses in every context, in every media.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if maybe you're just not a fan of the mob type stuff. But yeah, generally it's just like an old white guy who sits in a room and then he snaps his fingers and then 12 people across the country die. Like,
yeah, I guess, but even in, I mean, I haven't seen a lot, so I'm speaking from a position of ignorance here, but I feel like even in, like Godfather, which I haven't seen for a long time, but doesn't even the mob boss occasionally, like, whip out the bat and beat some ass? Like, these guys literally
don't.
Nothing.
Think so.
Okay.
No, not. So I mean, a lot of that. So funny you bring up Godfather. It's a lot of stuff where it's just like this, where the bosses, you know, like they even, like, the bosses will all meet up for a dinner and they're all cordial. Like, all the rival gangs are all, like, meeting up with each other to talk business. And then they just have goons that do all the handiwork, and it's like an ultimate patriarchy. So yeah, you're usually not going to see a mob boss getting his hands dirty.
Okay. Yeah. I guess that is, I'll tie it up to my, like, a small issue of this movie is, it's a lot of it is tell instead of show. They're telling a lot of exposition, tell me to believe certain things. And it's like, okay, I'll just accept it. But, like, I would prefer it if you had showed me a little more. Like, one thing I wrote down was, we got a tiny bit of it, but I would have liked to have seen De Niro, because he keeps saying, back in the day, I would have been, you know, it hustled for this, or I would have been in jail for this. Like, he kept saying, back in the day, back in the day. It's like, I wish you would have showed us him back in the day doing what he was doing in the Midwest, where he was, like, the best gambler, you know, of all time or whatever. We get, like, a tiny bit of him betting on horses, but, like, he just tells you, do you believe it? And you kind of see it later with him running the casino and the kind of things he sees and points out, but I don't know. There's 3 hours of this movie, but I kind of would have wished they allocated it a little bit differently sometimes.
Have I got a movie for you? Since you seem to really just want fully fleshed, like, I need to see everything start to finish. You just gotta watch The Irishman.
Yeah,
it's 4 hours, but then you can't complain that they don't do his childhood, because they do. Like,
you're not wrong. You're not wrong. Maybe I gotta watch it. But yeah, another other thing I wrote down, we were talking about the voiceover earlier, was the other trick they pulled was at the end, Nikki's voiceover gets cut off when he gets
beat. I thought that was super clever.
That was awesome, because it just shows, like, his arrogance.
Yeah.
And then it's like, nope, you're getting cut off. But
yeah, like, he's still in that, like, I am the main character mindset, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you reminded me, but there are a lot of, like, little editing moments in this movie that I really like.
Mm.
Nothing stood out to the point where I'm like, oh my god, this was such an amazing scene. But there were just, like, a lot of cool little moments where there was just a little flair put on the editing, and it wasn't just, like, a hard cut. It was, all of a sudden, we're inside, like, the light bulb in a flash of a camera, you know? So
There's a few pauses where they just pause the frame.
Yeah.
And sometimes it works, sometimes it didn't. I thought it was funny when it was, like, Frankie talking to the boss, and it paused, and it's him talking. But sometimes the pauses were kind of jarring. I was like, what's going on? Oh, okay, we're paused.
Yeah, it did feel a couple times, like, it was barely even noticeably long. It's just like, oh, that was a quick little freeze frame. And I'm like, I like little stuff like that, even though, like, I maybe don't understand, like, why that cut needed to be on a freeze frame.
Right, right. I did like the openings movie quite a bit with De Niro talking about trust and love and then getting blown up. But I did think it was weird it was a fake-out death, because if you watch closely, I mean, it's not that hard to see, but, like, in the first shot when he gets in the car and the car blows up, you can clearly see it be De Niro, and it's switched to a dummy body, and the dummy body blows up, and then later it's revealed that he actually rolled out of the car. So it's like, okay, like, it's very clear you want us to believe he's going to die, so I was like, wait, that's happening. And it didn't, like, ruin the movie. I'm like, okay, I'm excited to see what leads to this. But then he just, like, lives, and it's like, okay.
Yeah, I thought it was a very interesting way to start the movie. I thought it was super cool, and then to have the opening credits over, like, an explosion and, like, a body slow-mo falling, I thought it was kind of fun. It actually reminded me a lot of the opening of Goodfellas, which you've not seen, because you said this is your first Scorsese. He's, like, talking about love, and then he says, that's the kind of love I thought I had. And then his car explodes. Mm-hmm. It's like at the start of Goodfellas, he's, like, slamming the trunk on a guy in the trunk. And on the trunk slam, it's a freeze frame. It's ever since I can remember, I wanted to be a gangster. It's just, like, a cool little one-liner, set the mood, followed by some huge instrumental orchestral score bit. But yeah, overall, I mean, I like the editing, and I now, having seen a handful of Scorsese movies, he has a style.
Yeah.
A lot of his movies have a lot of things that remind you of each other. And I think if you are, you know, looking for movies, because I know you really like characterization, and Scorsese is like a king at that. His movies are so long, and it's because he spends so much time establishing everything about characters, and he makes you sit with them. and he follows them all the way through the up, all the way back crashing down to the ground, and then makes you sit there and understand that part of it too. I mean, The Irishman literally, it follows Robert De Niro from like when he's a kid to when he's in a nursing home and everyone he ever worked with is already gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like the scope of the story Scorsese tells is epic, as earlier mentioned.
Yeah. He's good at it. One more, well, coming to pick, but regarding the characterization thing, one thing I really appreciated was they taking the time to mention how Nicky always like was home to make his son breakfast, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then that never comes back. Like, I was wondering if it'd be something like he helps like get Amy back so you can kind of show he cares about kids. But, right. But he planned the kidnapping. So I'm like, I don't know. I was hoping that would kind of come back in some way.
Sure.
Of him and his kid, but it never really does.
I'm trying to think if there were any Chekhov's guns that didn't go off. That scene, like, that's another scene where it's like, this is literally only in here for characterization because it mm-hmm. contributes nothing to the plot, just shows you, like, oh, still a good dad, you know?
Yeah.
Or, like, when, like I like about that position, him playing baseball, yeah. Stuff like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the characterization, but I feel like it didn't go anywhere. Like,
no.
And maybe it doesn't need to, but I would have liked that to have called back at some point later of...
Yeah, it's basically just, like, an establishing shot. But for a people instead of like a city, you know. Like, yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't have too much more to say. Like, I don't. It's hard to talk about this movie. Like, it's so long, so you'd think there'd be a lot to talk about. But like, it really just ends up being like good characters, good story.
Yeah.
About greed and power and like it's done well. I do think it's. I mean, I do think it's a little bit too long. I think they could have cut some stuff out, but it's effective.
I think that's Scorsese's just gonna always make long movies.
Yeah.
But we didn't really touch on the acting, but I think the acting is all terrific.
Oh. I mean, Sharon Stone,
yeah.
Insanely good. Like,
she's so dynamic and her character has so much range she has to portray from, like, you know, she has to be the disillusioned housewife to extreme overreacting alcoholic.
Hysterics, yeah. But also, like, the super confident hustler or work a party, right? Yeah. Yeah, I think she's probably the stand-up for me.
I agree. I think the other two main leads are great, but they're great because they, you know, they've played that character a dozen mm-hmm. times. So
yeah,
not to slight it or anything, but yeah, it's well for De Niro and Pesci, it's well trodden territory. Whereas mm-hmm. like for Sharon Stone, this is just kind of a like an outer space level performance.
Right. I did read. Oh, go ahead.
No, after you.
I did read one piece of trivia that was interesting where apparently during the scene where she's calling De Niro from the payphone when she's with Les and the kid and she's kind of like crying and stuff, apparently she was like so anxious in that moment that she like screws as he was like holding her hand off screen, which I don't know how I feel about that. I'm like, was she like that emotionally like compromised for that character? I mean, the performance is super solid, but I worry, like, what did she have to do to get there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it could be full on, like, the method, you know?
Yeah.
Like, method actors will do that stuff where I would hope most don't. Like, it's acting, bro, just act. But,
in order to get to that hysterical state, though, I'd understand when you kind of need to make yourself anxious.
Or if not, like, immersing yourself in the character, she might be, you know, pulling on memory threads that are really traumatizing, stuff like that.
Right.
What were you going to say? I did have the one gripe, though. I was really, really hoping James Woods was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really don't like James Woods.
Yeah, me either.
And also his character in this movie is just kind of, like, very unlikable.
Oh, yeah, he's perfectly slimy.
Yeah, he is an absolute slime.
When's the last time we see him in this movie?
I think it's when they do the kidnapping. He never gets comeuppance for that.
That's so weird.
Disappears with the money.
Because I would have bet money beginning this movie that De Niro at some point pays to have him killed. Like, I thought for sure it'd be a hit out, and he was gonna be dead as hell. But
yeah, I was hoping to see him die.
Well, yeah, that's Casino. I mean, as far as recommendations, I mean, it's like any other Scorsese or gangster mob movie, right?
Yeah, so I thought about this one because I've seen a lot of Scorsese movies and movies like in this genre, and yeah, pretty much every Scorsese movie is in some way you can tie towards this one. I think the most obvious parallel is Goodfellas, but I think even more so than any of the Scorsese movies, I would recommend The Godfather Part Two.
Mm.
I think so. A lot of discourse has claimed that The Godfather Part Two is a better film than the original Godfather. I don't agree, but it's still fantastic, and it's another Robert De Niro performance, which he's great in it. And then, so the first Godfather follows the Corleone family and what's his name? Marlon Brando as the Godfather, and they're just kind of in their own little bubble. The second Godfather is post Marlon Brando, and it follows Al Pacino, Michael Corleone, as he moves his business to Las Vegas. So it's another mobster movie with a focus in Las Vegas. And then the B plot of that movie is a flashback to when Don Corleone got his start, and the young Marlon Brando is played by Robert De Niro. But I think it was interesting to see, because it brought up a lot of good memories about that movie, just watching like the Vegas underbelly mobster type stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Vegas was characterized very well, and you understood why they were there and why they're making so much money. I think that was portrayed really well.
Definitely.
Yeah. You actually just reminded me, it's not a mob movie, but all like the nerdy casino stuff at the beginning where Robert De Niro is like talking about how they're preventing cheaters and all that stuff reminded me of like Ocean's 11 a little bit.
I had the same thought, but it, yeah, there's
like in a good way. Like I love that movie. So like, yeah, if you want more casino-y fun stuff, I'd say Ocean's 11 and 13, I think is when they do a casino again.
Okay. I haven't seen 12 or 13. But yeah, I had the same thought at the beginning. I was like, oh, this casino, it feels kind of Oceans. And then the back half of the movie, not so much. But
yeah, we barely are in the casino, honestly, for the last half of the movie.
Yep, but which is like a full movie.
Yeah, time-wise. honestly. All right, but that's our review of Casino. Before we reveal what we're watching next week, we got a bunch of bonus reviews from over Thanksgiving break. Let's see. I'll start, Perk, because I got a very interesting pair to start this off.
Okay.
So, before Thanksgiving, I'm in my apartment. I'm browsing. And I remembered, oh yeah, that Jonah Hill documentary on Netflix came out. I'm going to watch that. So, this is called Stutz. It's a documentary that Jonah Hill made about his therapist, whose name is Philip Stutz. And I really, really, really liked it.
Okay.
It's one third of the movie is like the therapist talking about like here are some like techniques that like anybody can use to kind of help with anxiety, depression, finding your purpose in life, you know, that kind of stuff. Another third is kind of a biography on his therapist and his life and how he came to be where he is. And then the other third is like Jonah Hill talking about some of the problems he's had and things he's gotten through in therapy. And yeah, I just think it's super well done. It's definitely surprising. Like the first 20 minutes are a certain way, and you're like, okay, and then something happens, and you're like, oh, okay. So I think it's not just kind of a run-of-the-mill documentary. I think it's very powerful, and I think that the tools that Stutz like gives to the audience to use are like extremely useful. And as someone who's been in therapy for the past few months, I really appreciated it. And I would recommend this movie to anybody who's either in therapy, has been in therapy before, or is thinking about going to therapy, because I think it gives you like a starting point of just something to start thinking about, combined with some cool storytelling and just interesting people to learn about. So yeah, I really liked it and would definitely recommend it. Then along with that, I watched another documentary on Netflix that I've been wanting to watch, which is a documentary about the singer Lisa, who perks you know as the singer from the first Demon Slayer intro.
You mentioned, yes.
Yeah. So I love her. I love her music, and She has a documentary called Another Great Day, and it's about kind of her rise and how she kind of came up as an artist in Japan, and it kind of culminates in her 10-year anniversary kind of concert. And I haven't watched like any or hardly any music documentaries, so for what I've seen, I thought it was pretty good. But the interesting thing to me was I watched these back to back, and a lot of the tools that Stutz mentioned for like getting through hard times or overcoming, you know, anxiety, depression, and stuff like that, Lisa discovered those same things in her career. Like, she didn't call them the same things, obviously, but like I was seeing parallels between the things he was recommending and what she had used to get through hard points. And it was just really interesting. I'm like, oh, wow, like two people on completely different sides of the planet, like came to kind of some similar conclusions of how to overcome, you know, difficult things. So for that reason, like this combo of documentaries, like really hit me very hard. But yeah, I mean, if you're a fan of music documentaries or a fan of Lisa, I would definitely check it out. But like, I don't know if I'd recommend it to anyone else besides that, because you wouldn't have any context. But
fair enough.
Yeah, it was a nice little night of documentaries I don't normally do. So
I watched the trailer for Stutz,
mm-hmm.
and I thought it was a super weird premise. So I'm glad to hear you think it's good.
You should definitely at least watch the first like 30 minutes,
okay?
Because it'll give some context to that trailer and yeah, find out what's happening in it.
Is there any reason it's in black and white?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I don't want to spoil anything about it, which is weird to say about documentary, but like...
Fair enough.
It's definitely worth checking out, for sure. What's something you watch, Brooks?
I'll start with the one that I forgot to mention last week, which I feel bad about because I really liked it, but I watched Causeway on Apple TV Plus, which is... stars Brian Tyree Henry and Jennifer Lawrence. Jennifer Lawrence is a veteran of foreign wars who came back after an IED blew up her Humvee, and she had a traumatic brain injury from it. And like had to work back motor function, work back speaking. And it's she's on her recovery, and she moves on from like the support home, and her only option is to move back in with her mom in New Orleans. And when she's there, she meets a mechanic at like local mechanics shop, Brian Tyree Henry, and it like they develop a friendship over the course of the movie. It's not an overtly romantic relationship. It's just a friendship, and they have pitfalls and makeups, and it is a 100% run of the mill story pattern, and nothing about like the plot of the movie is revolutionary. What does it is the characters and the acting. The performances in this movie are revolutionary. Like, for what is a very small story about just two people in a moment, it is just so carried and elevated by just amazing performances. I think both actors probably... they won't, because I like the movie, but they should be nominated. they won't, because it didn't come out in November. So,
yeah.
That's how it goes. But I think if someone's just looking for a acting powerhouse to watch, it's not long, but you do have to have Apple TV. So
yeah,
which is would highly recommend rough. Causeway.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I love Brian Tyree Henry.
This is maybe the best I've seen him, and that's actually high praise because I think he's been great in like everything.
Yeah, he's so good. I'll try to watch him. Another thing I watched was the finale of Andor, was last week, and my god, this show is so fucking good. I tell you what, Perk, I had to go to campus last Wednesday morning to meet somebody, but I had like an hour before I was meeting them. So I was just in my office on campus watching this on my laptop, bawling my eyes out watching this finale, hoping no one came into my office to see me. I truly think everybody should watch this show. Like, not just for Star Wars fans, because it's barely, like, it's in Star Wars, but it's barely about Star Wars related to Star Wars. It just has some of the best characters I've ever seen, and incredible performance. Honestly, the thing is the writing. The writing is, like, 11 out of 10 incredible. Some of the best monologues I've ever seen, and fantastic building tension, great acting. Like, the funny thing to me is that the main character, Cassian Andor, played by Diego Luna, is my least favorite part of the show. Like, he's fine. Every other performance and character is way more fascinating, and the plots and the themes are just so relevant to modern times and the issues we're currently dealing with in America. So yeah, I just absolutely loved it. Cannot recommend it enough to anybody.
I've heard only praise, which it's just catching me off guard because Marvel, or not Marvel, but Disney. I
mean, Disney Plus. Yeah.
Disney has put out nothing even remotely inspired in the last couple years. So,
yeah.
Especially in a big IP, most of their stuff feels incredibly phoned in. But, like, I've heard overwhelming good things. So I'll probably just have to watch it, which is pretty out of character for me.
I think the reason it's because this isn't in the Filoni verse. The Dave Filoni, if you're familiar, but he's the guy who's running, like, he did the Clone Wars, he has all the animated Star Wars, he has Mandalorian, Boba Fett, like, more of, like, the more fun, bright-colored, you know, kind of hype Star Wars stuff. This show is run by Tony Gilroy, who I'm trying to remember, he's known for, like, a big show like this, but the writing is just insane. Oh, yeah, he did, like, the Bourne movies.
Oh, okay.
So it definitely has that kind of vibe of, I mean, it's espionage and it's more brutal. Like, the violence is way more grounded and more painful, I think, to watch. And yeah, it's incredible. And I hope that, I mean, season two is already confirmed and is being made. I think it's only going to be two seasons as it leads up to Rogue One.
Okay.
But yeah, it's incredible.
See, I wonder if also this, like, is Cassian Andor the only crossover character from Rogue One?
No.
Okay.
Because at least, well, Mon Mothma.
Okay.
And then there's, like, one other guy who's in Rogue One, but he's not, like, a big character.
I was going to say, like, one of the biggest pitfalls of Rogue One for me was that when everyone bit the bucket at the end. Yeah. First of all, I knew it was coming because it had to, because this is shoehorned in after the fact. So mm-hmm. There's no way anyone can make it out of this. Otherwise, where would they have been? You know? So, right. And then also I just didn't care about anyone involved because they weren't really established as characters. But if you have two seasons of development on Cassian Andor, well, that might put Rogue One in a new lens, you know. So.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I'm really excited to watch Rogue One after the show finishes, because he's also not my favorite part of the movie either. But yeah, watching him, you know, trying to figure out, okay, when is he going to turn? When's he going to decide he wants to join the rebellion? What's going to be enough for him? You know, that is very interesting and satisfying to watch. And then just all the other characters are just so incredible. Andy Serkis, I mean, we already knew he's good. But he shows up and he just puts on one of the best performances I've ever seen out of him. Incredible show. But Perk, do you want to talk about Spirited next?
We can, yes. Yes, all right,
let's. You go first here.
All right. So we coincidentally both watched the Apple TV Plus original movie Spirited, which it stars Will Ferrell and Ryan Reynolds. And it is a spin-off of the Christmas Carol universe, the Dickens Christmas Carol, where essentially the ghosts of past, present, and future Christmas are part of almost like the Santa Claus type workshop. Every holiday they try and save a soul And they do the whole Christmas Carol haunt to one person every year. And they decide one year they're going to do Ryan Reynolds, who's in it did bug me. He's an unredeemable, even though the word is irredeemable. but he's an unredeemable, so there's like no way to turn him. And so the movie is trying, like Will Ferrell's Ghost of Christmas Present, trying to turn over Ryan Reynolds' billionaire business asshole into a good person.
Mm-hmm. And I want to be very clear, it is a musical.
Yes.
I think a lot of people did not know that. The people I watched this with did not know that going in.
Neither did I.
Are we spoiling this, or are we not?
Let's not. Because it came out not long ago.
Yeah, and it's a Christmas movie, so there's still time for that.
Especially,
what do you think?
Especially, too, I don't want to spoil it, because I'm going to tell people to watch this movie.
Okay, yeah.
I had such a good time. Oh, it's so fun and stupid and bottom of the barrel, but you know what? For Christmas movies, the bar is so low that even the fact that it was a musical didn't turn me off of it. So
we started watching it, and I was like, "Oh man, Perk's gonna hate this because it's a musical." but I was not planning on watching this. I was at my uncle's house for Thanksgiving, and they saw the trailer on TV and like, "Oh yeah, we should watch this tonight." And I'm like, "I don't know." I didn't say anything, but I'm like, the reviews I was seeing was bad, like 5 or 6s out of 10. I'm like, oof. I'm like, all right, I guess this is happening, so we go on to watch it. And I was going in really excited to not like it, and it actually won me over. Like, it's not an amazing movie,
even
but
if
I had
it's
a
not
really
good,
fun time.
You can't say you weren't like it. You can't say it didn't exceed your expectation.
Oh, it definitely exceeded my expectations. Yeah. I definitely had a fun time. Ryan Reynolds and Will Ferrell's chemistry was great.
It was really good. Yeah.
A lot of great little one-liners, and I honestly, my what I'm most impressed by is the dance choreography.
I think the
dance numbers were incredibly done. Like the production value on the songs and stuff was amazing. If I have to give one knock, I think it was a little bit overly ambitious.
Okay.
With the story and also some of the VFX, I think were a little overly ambitious. I think the theme got a bit muddled. I feel like the theme changed about 5 times in this movie, what they wanted the message to be.
Yeah.
So I think the setup was really cool and very modern, and I was like happy they were addressing some modern issues with our society. But then they kind of just dropped a lot of that, and I was like, oh, okay. But it's very fun. But I would definitely say no, it's a musical before you start watching it, because if you don't like musicals, you might not like this at all.
And I mean, the music numbers are nothing inspirational. Like,
yeah, the songs are fine.
They're not
garbage. The singing
garbage.
Is very hit or miss, I think, with some of the actors. But the dancing, I think, is incredible. Like, dancing was very, very good.
And the music, like, I do not remember a single song. It's not like it's not like other musicals where I haven't seen Hamilton, but a lot of people like listen to the Hamilton soundtrack. Like, probably no one will do that with the Spirited soundtrack, but my ears weren't bleeding. So
yeah,
I did have one big gripe though.
Okay,
who is this movie for?
I'll tell you who it's for, because I watched it with my family, who is this is my uncle's family, who is very Christian and very we don't watch our movies and stuff, and I think it's for them because this movie goes places but doesn't go there. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And it implies the things but does not show them because it wants to be family friendly. So yeah. I think this is a very family friendly, you know, if you like Ryan Reynolds and Will Ferrell kind of movie, holiday movie.
But see, here's the thing too. Like, I wouldn't play this to young children. I mean, there's some vulgarity that doesn't need to be in there at all. Like, I think at one point Ryan Reynolds calls someone a whore. Like, what? I don't think the movie gets any worse if you pull that out. But then on top of that, there's the scene Ryan Reynolds has to deal with his Ghost of Christmas Future. Like, oh boy, that's hefty.
But that's what I'm talking about, where it's all implied, though. They don't say the words.
Right, no, and they don't show
you
anything.
So a kid wouldn't understand what's happening. So it's like...
Right, but thematically it's like, oh my God. Like,
yeah.
Wait a second. No,
I think you could play this kid for like super young kids. Kids won't understand a lot of that stuff.
Oh, okay, okay.
Kids that are like maybe like middle school or maybe like elementary school might be a weird age, but like anything outside of that, I think it's probably fine.
Yeah, I feel like this one could have easily been dumbed down into an actual like kids PG. Movie. Yeah, yeah.
But
I think it was a little funnier because it was allowed to take a couple liberties. So
I agree, and I also think they wanted to go a little bit more mature with the themes, but that's where my gripe was of like, well, yeah, but you changed the theme like 5 times, so it's like, I don't know. I've always been a little more consistent with that, but it was definitely better than I expected. Fun time.
Yeah.
If you like Ryan Reynolds and Will Ferrell, I'd probably recommend it.
Yeah, and I mean, like, with... Oh God, because so many just garbage Christmas movies are peddled out every year. I know because I love them. namely, The Princess Switched.
Yep.
They're making a fourth. I mean, like, The Night Before Christmas with a K. Like, these are the level of Christmas movies that are getting put out. And then this one comes out, and it's built off an IP, but it's, like, kind of creative and feels fresh. And has a... the did you enjoy the ending? I thought it was kind of nice.
I actually did.
Obviously, we won't spoil it, but I...
Yeah, it was bold, and I appreciated that they went there. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So, you could do a lot worse for Christmas watching. Yeah,
I'd agree. Last thing I watched, I'll throw in now because it's related, is I watched the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special.
Oh, yeah.
Which came out this last week.
Is it on the level of the Star Wars Christmas Special?
You know, I haven't seen it, but I've heard about it, and I imagine it's a little bit better. It's like a 45-minute little special by James Gunn with, you know, the Guardians doing Christmas stuff. It's a fun time. There are worse ways to spend, you know, 45 minutes if you want to get in the Christmas mood. Good humor, some cool little visual stuff I won't spoil. They got Kevin Bacon as himself as kind of the MacGuffin of this movie, which was pretty fun.
Nice.
And I teared up at the end. I think it had a nice little emotional payoff. So, if you're a fan of Guardians of the Galaxy, I definitely recommend it. Nice little holiday thing. So
cool.
What else do you watch, Burke?
In the theme of Christmas and such, I watched it's the only movie I can think of that's a Thanksgiving classic.
Thanksgiving?
No. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Okay. I heard they released new footage recently.
Did they? I was unaware. Have you seen it? Yeah.
No, I need to watch it.
You really should.
They just... release like a 4K version with 30 minutes of like deleted scenes.
Oh, cool.
So some stuff is going around Twitter. And,
all right. Well, I'll maybe watch that, although I'll probably give it a while because I did just watch the original cut recently. Mm. But it is such a beautiful and charming movie, and it has just a great lesson to learn and really tugs at the heartstrings. Like, that's a movie that makes me tear up every time. And fantastic performances. John Candy was gone way too soon. He's just so good and sweet, and he plays the character who like is just the nicest guy, but he's so annoying. Like, and you know, it's not his fault, but he just annoys the shit out of you. And then Steve Martin as the straight man, also great. It's like the perfect combination, and it's a formula that's been done. And it's been done many times since, but they just hit the nail on the head. And it's just a wonderful, like, family-friendly-ish, outside of one scene. Steve Martin has a incredibly profane blow-up at one point. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, it's fairly family-friendly, and it really hits home during the holidays. I love that movie.
Yeah, I really want to watch it. Is it streaming, or did you rent it?
We rented it, unfortunately.
Okay.
It's on Paramount, so.
God damn it.
Effectively, doesn't matter for you.
Yeah. Okay, I'll try to watch it this December. And then you have one more thing, right?
Yeah, I had one more. So, I made a trek out to the theater.
Oh!
Yes, sir. And I saw because I just wanted to catch a movie with a friend while they were in town. And there were not a ton of great options. I mean, the one that was kind of eye-catching was the Call Me By Your Name director cannibal movie with Timothée Chalamet.
Right.
Which I think I will watch.
Mm-hmm.
But I will watch that in my home where I can go hide in another room if I have to. And then also The Menu, which I think looks good, but I think that's a movie that I'll watch when it streams.
Mm-hmm.
And settled on Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio.
Oh, so quick question. But are they going to do Fablemans? Or was it not showing?
I don't even know if that's out yet, but no.
Okay.
Went and saw Pinocchio.
All right.
And I am going to go ahead and say that the Disney remake that came out this year pales in comparison. Mm. Because I think that this version is just better than the original version.
Yeah.
It is... Oh, it's so good. So it's stop motion animated, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. a win always. Always yep. a win. It has much weightier themes. It deals heavily with the concepts of death and mortality, and it, you know, it has just such good voice acting and it's a little bit of a spoiler, but I'll let you know that. So, do you remember in the original Pinocchio, the side plot where he ends up going to the fancy island?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, in the Disney remake they made earlier this year, instead of drinking beer, they all have root beer. Because kids drinking beer, that's not Disney Plus. And Pinocchio doesn't even drink the root beer. like the man is just shown as a saint. This movie replaces that subplot with the fact that it takes place in Mussolini's Italy. And at one point, Pinocchio gets kidnapped and sent away to a fascist military kids' camp.
Mm.
So, in case you were thinking this is just like a little fun, family-friendly, it's PG, but
yeah.
It's one of those movies like Coraline, which is PG, but messed me up as a child.
Sure.
So, I would say I heavily recommend it because the stories are great, the morals are great, the animation is great, voice acting is phenomenal. It's got like Christoph Waltz plays the fox, and he's hilarious. some guy I don't know plays Geppetto, but he's great. Ewan McGregor plays Sebastian J. Cricket.
Perfect.
And there's this fun bit where a few times, I think twice over the course of the movie, he like takes his hat off and starts to go into song, and then we'll just get like hit with a boot or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, in the end credits, they let him do his whole song, and it's amazing. And I cried. I cried at the end. As I said, it deals with mortality and death, and you know how death is the only thing that gives life meaning and stuff like that. So I think this is a movie worth seeing on a screen if possible, but worth seeing at all, 100%.
Yeah.
And it won't feel like cookie cutter copy pasted, even though three Pinocchio adaptations have come out this year. I'm guessing that the copyright lapsed.
It went into public domain.
Yep.
Recently. Yeah, no, I'll probably wait for Netflix because I'm a lazy piece of shit.
Well, yeah, because that's the thing. It's a Netflix original production or whatever, so as soon as it's done on its theatrical run, it's going to pop up on Netflix.
Yep, same with Glass Onion.
Which, yeah, that one I'm probably going to wait until the holidays to watch with the family or something. But yeah, I don't even know where it was playing. I couldn't find it, so I did not go see Glass Onion.
Yeah. No, that sounds great. One thing I saw, actually, with regards to it being a kid's movie, right? What you said, but it's kind of dark, is I saw it was Guillermo del Toro talking after a screening of Pinocchio with a fan who was asking him that very question of like, how do you think about making movies like for kids or whatever? And he said that, well, you know, like there's dark things in this movie, but the kids these days have grown up in dark times, and like with pandemic and just all the horrible things that have happened lately. And he's like, I think if, you know, they can watch it with a parent and the parent talks to them afterwards and tells and explains to them, you know, what's going on or how they're feeling. Like he felt like the kids these days are they can handle it because they've handled the world that we live in. Another very interesting take.
That puts good perspective on it. I think you're right. It's he does make a good point. You know, like kids these days are a little more weathered. This is definitely a movie that like you could watch with a parent and then have a conversation because the central themes are, you know, very applicable. I can't recommend it enough. I like. If Marcel Duchamp with shoes on did not exist in my mind, I still think Pinocchio is going to be a shoo-in for best animated feature Oscar. Mm-hmm. But I nothing can beat Marcel for me.
Yeah, for sure.
But we'll see once the whole Oscar cycle starts kicking. But.
Maybe we'll do an episode where we do some Oscar predictions or something like that.
Sure. I mean, I kind of did it last year, so I...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'd be down to do something similar, although there are already a few movies that are going to be on the ticket that I just don't really want to see. Like, you could tell me that Till is the best movie of the last 10 years, and I will say, I believe you, and I will probably not go see it, because I just there's so much negativity in life right now. I just... Yeah. I like movies like Spirited, where I could just go out there and have a happy hour and a half, you know. So,
for sure. Speaking of that, actually, I want to give a quick shout out. So we're in one of my favorite things this time of year is that The Hollywood Reporter and I think THR2, that is THR. There's another Variety. They both are doing these roundtables videos with writers, directors, actors, you know.
Sure.
And they dropped their first one, which is a writer's roundtable, and it has stacked cast. You got Jordan Peele for Nope. You got Rian Johnson for Glass Onion. You got Daniel Kwan for Everything Everywhere All at Once. Ooh. You got Tony Kushner for Fablemans. You got Martin McDonagh for Banshees. And you have, where's her name? Shione Chukwu, hopefully I pronounced that right, for Till.
For Till, okay.
Yeah. Incredible. I absolutely love this round table. I thought it was so interesting to watch and just an incredible like group of people to hear just talk about filmmaking. So highly recommend that video.
How long?
About an hour.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Some good work content.
Definitely. Yeah, there'll be more of those, I think, over the coming months.
Cool. I love that as an idea.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that is our show for this week. Thank you all for listening. Next time, we'll be watching Total Recall, the original with the Schwarzenegger. We're following Sharon Stone to that, and that is streaming on HBO Max. Like I said, I've seen the remake, but I've not seen the original, so I'm excited.
I've seen neither.
The effects. Okay. Do you know the premise at all?
Not really.
Perfect. There we go. So, yeah, Total Recall... Total Recall on HBO Max next week. But until then, thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye-bye.